You're listening to The Brian D. O'Leary Show, your sanctuary for serious content in an unserious culture.
Welcome to the show, The Brian D. O'Leary Show. I am Brian O'Leary, and today I have a special guest with us, Jim Murphy. He's the author of Inner Excellence, Train Your Mind for Extraordinary Performance in the Best Possible Life, New York Times number one bestseller. Now, if you follow sports, you may have seen Jim's book in the hands of NFL superstar A.J. Brown, plays for the Philadelphia Eagles. He was spotted reading the book on the sidelines during last year's playoffs and Super Bowl. We'll get into that a little bit. But Inner Excellence, Jim's book, it's not just for athletes. It's a powerful system for anyone looking to master their mind and redefine what success means in their life. So today in our conversation, Jim shares how his journey from professional baseball, he was a former minor league player in the Cubs organization, through struggles, setbacks, and a career-ending vision problem, actually, that led him to develop these principles of inner excellence. So we're going to dive into some stories from the world of elite sports. And like we often talk about on this show, in our daily emails at briandoleary.com, the lessons here go far beyond the field of play. Now, whether you're an athlete, a business leader, or just someone seeking peace or perhaps a defined purpose in life, you can find practical wisdom to help you let go of fear and start living the best life possible with this book of Jim Murphy's. So if you're ready to train that mind for extraordinary performance, more meaningful life, you'll want to hear what Jim has to say. And if you want to get your own copy of Inner Excellence, we set up a page over there at briandoleary.com/innerexcellence, all one word. So let's get started. Here's my interview with Jim Murphy. All right, we got Jim Murphy here today. And Jim is the author of, well, not a new book, but a recently republished book called Inner Excellence, Train Your Mind for Extraordinary Performance and the Best Possible Life. You've probably heard about Jim. First thing I think I want to talk to you about is we all may have heard about this book from watching the NFL playoffs last year in the Super Bowl. A.J. Brown had your book on the sidelines. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how he got the book?
So A.J., he got the book from his teammate, Mauro Ajomo. And Mauro Ajomo just said, hey, I think you'd really like this book. Take a look at it. And so obviously he did. Mauro got it from DJ Gerotelli at the University of Texas, Austin. He's the Athletes in Action leader there. And so that's where Mauro got it. So I saw a picture of AJ reading the book on the sideline, but I didn't know. This was like 3 weeks before January 12th was the first time in the Packers wild card game. And I didn't have any context. And so when I found out on the 12th, that was, I didn't know that he was bringing it to every game, reading it before every game to get centered and reading it after every drive to get refocused.
There was a specific passage, I think, that he highlighted. I saw that he would go back to after each series. Is that?
Yeah, they showed, zoomed in on a few of the pages that he had highlighted most of the words in yellow highlighter. And I think he really liked the part about having a clear mind and unburdened heart, because being a receiver in the NFL, it's a scary proposition. Right. And so he needs to have a clear mind if he wants, because there's no fear when you're present. And so I think he really used the book to help him get present.
So, yeah, I think that leads us into what is inner excellence? The title of your book, it's a system as far as I can understand. And I think, I don't know who said it, but systems over goals is pro over amateur. And we're dealing with a lot of
players. It's kind of like James Clear, Atomic Habits.
Yeah.
So, yeah, inner excellence is an in-depth system to learn how to be fully present in your life, fully engaged, heart, mind, and body, unattached to the results of what you're trying to do. And learning self-mastery, learning how to master the ego, that part of your mind that's always threatened, always comparing, never satisfied, overthinking.
Yeah. And in the book, we'll get that in a little bit, but you talk about failure somewhere in the middle. I have it in my notes. I don't have the exact page. I wish I did, but there's no failure, only feedback. And being in this, in similar space, I just fell into it, I guess, trying to teach people these skills that you talk about And, you know, I come from a sports background, baseball coaching, and I want to get to that in a moment. But I say I've never really failed. I've had a lot of opportunities for personal growth, is what I say. Is how I reframe it. Is that appropriate?
Powerful. Yeah. So what is failure and what is success? Those words are very cliche. And America, the American dream is to be a huge success and not to fail. Mm-hmm. And so it's definitely an illusion, because you can say you're a marathon runner and you have your very best time ever, personal best, but you don't win. So you failed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little crazy in America. Using the wrong barometer, wins and losses are not a good way to measure anything, because you can win and play terrible, or lose and play great. And so we need a new definition of success, and so much is out of your control when you're performing in a business and in life and sports, everything. So we really need to redefine what we really want most in our life. And with Inner Excellence, we focus on training the heart and training it to love most what's most empowering, because your heart is the control center of your life.
And you quote John Wooden in here on success. And I read another book, and I don't know. I think it was, I'm not even going to worry about it. But they had a definition of success that was very similar. And I think it came from John Wooden also. Yours is more expansive than what I had written down. I had written down peace of mind, a direct result of the effort to become the best. And in your book, you have a more expansive quote, like I said, peace of mind, which is a direct result of self-satisfaction and knowing you made the effort to become the best of which you're capable. And those UCLA teams, like you mentioned in the book, he didn't even scout, really. And he worked on fundamentals and their team and making sure their team was on top of the best thing they can do. And then you get on the floor and the game plays out. Maybe talk a little bit more about that.
Let's look at Scottie Scheffler, amazing guy, world number one golfer, amazing caddy, Teddy Scott in Louisiana. What's the greatest gift that he has? He's super talented, right? It's not golf. It would be golf if golf made it, cured cancer or saved lives or taught people anything that was really, really meaningful. I mean, it does. It teaches you discipline and how to focus and how to sacrifice. So there are definitely great things about sports. But the greatest gift that Scottie has is his wisdom, which I define as to know who God is and who you are, what God's doing in the world and how you can fit in. Or another way you can say it is wisdom is an expansive view of possibilities and an unobstructed view of connections to people and to God and to yourself, your true self. And so it's important to recognize that Western culture is obsessed with the symbols of success.
Okay.
When it's such an illusion, because you can spend your whole life pursuing that and never get what you really want. And why do you want that house in the ocean? Why do you want that trophy or that raise or that nicer car? It's because you want to have great experiences. You want to have a better life, right? Well, you can have a million followers and $1 million and have a terrible life. And so Inner Excellence is about pursuing what's really meaningful and true with a capital T.
Yeah. And you brought up Scottie Scheffler. I wrote about him yesterday, I guess, about the grind and the consistency of Scottie. You look at that tournament, if you watch it at all or read about it, and it's just relentless. I think I put it relentless consistency was what it was. And then it became a record setting event for him. I want to talk real quickly golf, because you brought it up and what success is. This is a personal thing for me. I played in one golf tournament my entire life. I'm an okay golfer. I haven't played in a long time, but played in one golf tournament. It was a 2-day event. And I think the first day, you know, I was like at the time, maybe like a 12 or 15 handicap, something like that. So I shot a 92 the first day, 94, something like that. I was like, yeah, it was okay, but I was all over the place. The next day, I think I'd read somewhere about these Vietnam prisoners of war, where they would just imagine playing golf in their head and imagine the course. So I had to go on a trip and come back like 3 hours each way later that night. And so I'm just like thinking the course through. Well, I get to the 18th hole and I'm like, holy cow, I'm going to break 90 for maybe the first time in my life. And like, I'm going, maybe I can make 83 or something if I hit this shot. So I get over the ball and I do the whole thing. Like, it is, I'm on it. I hit the shot and I got it. I know my distance, everything. I shank it in the water and I'm like, holy cow. But then through this whole discipline thing, I just collected myself, got the bogey and got out of there. Still made it. And I ended up like thinking I was stressing out, like I wasn't going to finish in the top, but it turned out that I did. But anyway, the point is, I tell people this all the time. I didn't lose on that shank. I did everything I was prepared to. It was just a bad hit or bad luck. And so I felt, you know, that was a very successful round, even though I shanked it on 18, which if you go to the pros, you know, you would be talked about as the GOAT, not the greatest of all time, but the Vandeveld or whatever it might be. But I'm like, I would have done everything the same and I still felt fine. So I think that type of success, because I bettered my personal, you know, I beat my, mm-hmm. you know, my previous self, I guess is what I'm saying. So I don't know if you have any.
Yeah, that's great. And it's also likely that part of your mind was thinking about the future a little bit when you're on 18. Is that possible?
A little bit, but you know, I'd
like to get a good score here. I might finish with a good score. I just got one more hole. I could just finish this hole okay, and it'll end up being a great day.
Yeah.
It's very, very common.
Yeah. Well, anyway, yeah. So you work with golfers, you work with baseball teams or baseball players. You're a former baseball player yourself. And am I correct that you went to Portland State University?
That's right. The Vikings.
Vikings. I grew up in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, wow.
My mentor of probably all mentors is Jack Dunn.
Really?
Yeah.
Jack Dunn. That's amazing. My coach.
Yeah, your coach. So, and Mike Wantland, who you probably know from.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. He is probably one of my biggest advocates in the game of baseball too.
And oh so my gosh.
I grew up with those guys going to their camps and eventually I work with Coach Dunn.
That's amazing.
But yeah. So you went from Portland State to the Cubs organization about years, right?
And, yeah, 3 years with the Cubs and then 2 years independent.
Okay. All right. And so I was gonna ask, how did your time as a pro athlete help you understand this, or was it, did you understand it at all in college or the pros?
Yeah.
And, I know you took your journey into the desert you talk about, but did you know anything about what you're talking about now back then?
I sure could have used it. That definitely would have been nice. I started studying sports psychology probably when I was 17. My head coach and high school and Kent Washington, Larry Book said, hey, you should read sports psychology. Here's a book. It's called Mental Toughness Training for Sports by Dr. Jim Lehrer. I carried that book with me for years and years everywhere. And I always remember one thing he said is that the correct emotional response to a problem is 75% of the solution. Mm. And so now having emotional stability and behavioral flexibility, being able to adapt to any situation, it's one of the five skills of inner excellence. So remind me of the question.
Oh, I was just saying, how did your time as a professional athlete inform where you are now?
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of failure, a lot of struggle and loneliness. It was really hard. I had a vision problem that really ended my career, but I struggled with it for almost my entire professional career. I didn't know that. And one of the biggest, loneliest things for me are we're created for love. I shouldn't say, you know, but that's our number one need is unconditional love, and our greatest desire is to be fully known and fully loved. And so when I signed with the Cubs, you know, everyone's rooting for me in Portland and Seattle, and I felt like I let everybody down. And also I didn't really understand why I was not performing well, and I was like, man, I just feel so bad about all these relationships that I had that were rooting for me. And I didn't know that I had a serious vision problem for my, especially the first 3 years of pro baseball. But now looking back, it was just amazing, you know, what God did in teaching me how to handle adversity. You know, one of the biggest things we need to learn is how to handle fear and anxiety and adversity.
Yeah. So this vision problem, did you know? You say you didn't know, but did you see signs of it maybe in high
But the
school,
hardest thing
college,
was
or did
not at all.
the
I
game?
think it started in pro baseball.
Oh, it did. Okay.
And because I think it was a mental thing from my subconscious mind, my dad was did not want me to become rich and famous. Kind of ironic how things have turned out, but he thought it would be bad for my character, and so being a pro athlete was not something that he really wanted for me. And so I think there was a bit of a mental block there, because when I turned pro, that's when my vision kind of went south.
Yeah.
And the hard thing, there's many hard things to it, but one thing was my eye chart vision was better than 20/20, so I didn't know that I had a problem. It's just what happened was I was struggling in school at the University of Washington, and I remember having headaches when I would read and buying a can of Coke to read with. And then I finally went to the eye doctor for some reason, and she checked my dynamic visual acuity, and which is the ability for your muscles to work together to track moving objects, which is very helpful in baseball.
Yeah, pretty good skill to have in
And
pro ball.
so she checks it, and she says, "Oh, okay, I see the problem here." And she said, "By the way, what kind of work do you do?" I said, "I'm a professional baseball player." And she said, "How did you hit the ball?" I was like, "Well, it's been hard." And she's like, "Whoa, yeah, I can't believe you'd be able to hit the ball without that." So that was an issue that I struggled with my whole career.
Yeah, so but you overcame. You work through this thing. It's just like an almost an intractable problem there physically, perhaps. So, as far as mentality goes, what would you say the for pro golfers or pro athletes, what would you say the most common mental blocks that you see even in high performance? You mentioned Scottie Scheffler. He has down days. He doesn't win every single tournament. I mean, he won 7 times last year, I think, but first time this year. And how do you help guys like this? Stenson and
There's
Fellows overcome it.
two mental blocks that I see. One is n not being able to let go of your past to become someone you've never been before, and the other one is mental block over some simple skill that you've always been able to do, but then becomes this mental thing. And so, if we talk about the second one first, so in golf they call it the yips, and in the book I mentioned that an NFL kicker is generally not going to have a mental block on a 55-yard field goal because the expectations are low. The mental blocks are in the PATs, the easy things. A golfer generally is not going to have a mental block on a 40-foot putt. They may have it on a 4-foot putt because the expectations get in our mind, and the fear of failure, fear of being embarrassed. And so what we want to do is ask yourself, am I willing to be embarrassed? Am I willing to fail? Am I willing to look foolish in order to master my ego? Do I just want to be successful in this moment, or do I want to master my ego? And the ego will say, "Oh, you just got to be successful in this moment." So it's that challenge.
Right. So I talk about sports a lot and relate, life to sports, and you do too in your book. But how, so the book really is not a sports book, but it has a lot of examples from the sports world. How do you say, all right, we're going to take these lessons and this is life. This is what you're talking about is life. And, to be a better sportsman, better athlete, whatever, you can use some of these skills. But I guess when you talked about success earlier, we see these bright, shiny objects in the form of success as championships, Super Bowl wins, Masters jackets, all that stuff. How does this work for me or my people who don't do sports? They're just living life.
Yeah, so Inner Excellence was developed over 5 years of 50 to 60 hours a week for 5 years straight, researching and writing about how to be mentally tough in the toughest pressure situations in the world. And so I focused on professional and Olympic athletes, but really, there's a lot of Americans that have a lot more pressure than a pro athlete. I mean, people working two jobs, there's no off season, don't have coaches like me that are guiding them. Don't have massage therapists and trainers and all that, and so average American may have it harder than the pro athletes that I work with. And so Inner Excellence is really about understanding human behavior, how your mind works, how your subconscious works, how fear works, and especially what the heart deeply needs, and how to train it. And so Inner excellence is about training the heart, and I mean, you can think about, if you're a listener, self-centeredness is the biggest challenge that we face in performance and in life, and it leads to three things that really become huge obstacles. And one is overanalysis, just way too many thoughts from way too many concerns. And then the other one is negative thinking or judgmental thinking, laying down a negative verdict on yourself or someone else or circumstance when you don't have all the information. Now, often in life, we always know what we want, or generally know what we want and know what we don't want. Like I always, given a choice, hot tub or poked in the eye, 100% of the time I choose the hot tub. I'm always going for comfort. That's my human nature. But that's not, often it's not the best thing for me. May not be poked in the eye, but the best possible life has one foot in joy, one foot in suffering. That's how we grow. That's how life is created. And we need to break down the muscles in order to get stronger. The third big obstacle that comes is this self-consciousness, concern for what other people think about you. The ego amplifies our deep need to be fully known and fully loved, and says, hey, if you get this success, this symbol of success, then you're going to get what you really want. And so many people, perhaps most people, and perhaps most people that are talented in some area, fall into this trap where they just obsess about getting more success, because it's going to give them that temporary positive feeling that they want, when they don't realize that they're missing out on the whole candy store of abundance and joy.
I think it's helpful for people to have this definition of success to walk around with and reframe what that means. I just don't see a whole lot of Americans, maybe people in the entire world, understand what we mean by success. It's this ethereal thing, but it's what Wooden says. It's ultimately peace of mind. I mean, you can go full stop there. Success is peace of mind. But do you see people searching for peace of mind, or is that what your work does, is help those people who are searching?
Anxiety is at epidemic levels in America and around the world. Oh. And especially in America, we have the most affluence and the most anxiety. And that's not a coincidence. People are obsessing about temporary, superficial things because they don't have this deeper understanding. They feel, if I get these temporary, superficial things, it's going to give me what I want most. Mm-hmm. Which is the quote love that I get from, I'll be somebody, I'll be enough. And so people are constantly trying to get more things, get enough and do enough so they can be enough, but they're never enough. It's never going to work. We need something deeper than material success and rewards. We need a heart that's transformed, one that loves and lives fully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you talked about overanalysis being one of the things, and we, in baseball, we often talk about paralysis by analysis, where you just can't, you start thinking about things so much that you can't do anything, or your muscles seize up, and then it's anxiety on the ball field or whatnot. And the mental thing becomes physical in many ways. So I think perhaps it's anxiety, overabundance of anxiety in America is perhaps also correlated with physical issues too with people. Would you agree or disagree?
Yeah, in pro baseball, I work with a lot of pro baseball players. It's a unique sport because there's 162 games, plus we got preseason and postseason, and it's you're immersed in this culture that's obsessed with results. It's baseball is so statistically oriented, mm-hmm. and so stats are never a present thing. But if you want to be great, you need to be present, and yet they're immersed in a culture that's obsessed about this past future number. And it's really hard to be when you're hard to be your true self, and hard to have this peace and joy and freedom when you're in a culture, immersed in a culture that's obsessed about the opposite, the temporary superficial things that come and go and you don't have full control over.
Mm. Yeah. And as far as baseball goes, you've had a long career both in and around the game. I'm interested in something I think you more or less offhandedly mentioned in the book, in that you talked about Olympic athletes. You were an Olympic coach for South Africa, which I didn't even know had a baseball team. I think I saw him play in the World Baseball Classic one time. But can you tell me about how you got into that and how you...
Yeah, it was a real miracle how God has guided my life. I've had so many times where I felt like a failure. And now I look back, I see it was all training for me. You know, I went to grad school, did my master's in coaching science. I interviewed 39 Major League Baseball managers and GMs and college and professional coaches on how to build a championship team. I did all of that so I can get a job with the Texas Rangers. Because I thought after coaching 1 year of high school baseball in O'Day High School, inner city Seattle, and we didn't lose a game, that I thought, oh, my destiny is to be a superstar Major League manager, not a player. And so I went through this path of getting the master's in coaching science with this long-term plan of getting a job in pro baseball. And I end up getting the job 2 weeks after graduation. And then I quit halfway through the season, that first season. It just was not a box that I was could fit into. At the time, I thought I was a complete failure. Now, looking back, it was like they were boxing me in, and I had got a far greater things for me to do. So that was 1999. You know, just what am I going to do with my life now? Then I get a call from Major League Baseball and said, "Would you be interested in coaching South Africa, being their hitting coach for their Olympic trials?" And I said, "Where will I be based?" And they said Johannesburg, which at the time was one of the most dangerous cities in the world.
Right.
So I thought, are they asking me because everyone else has turned it down, and I'm choice number 20? But I took the job, and the most amazing experience of my life. I'm still friends with that whole group in South Africa. Our bat boy Gift Ngupe was living in the tool shed of our baseball
Pirates.
Field. That's right. He lived in the tool shed of our baseball field with his mother and little brother. And just the most amazing story. First African player born ever to play in the big leagues.
So. Yeah. Gift. I remember reading about him in Sports Illustrated.
He's awesome.
Yeah. Well, great. And you've got to know Tom Treblehorn, I take it, from reading in your book. Tom Treblehorn's a Portland guy. Played high school baseball for Coach Dunn. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah.
Play third base. He talks about him all the time. You talk to Coach Dunn, he thought what a great mind for the game Treb had. And I think Treb was the guy who basically taught Ricky Henderson how to steal bases.
Treb's amazing. I was going to Portland State, taking the baseball class that Jack was teaching, and he brought Treb in to speak. And I just remember, oh my gosh, this is so incredible. I mean, there's probably only 25 people in the class. I was like, how do I get to hear this? And then, he coached with the Brewers and the Cubs. He ends up coaching. He takes a year and coaches independent baseball, a year that I was playing, and I had my eyes were better that year, so I had a great year. And so I played against him. We played them in the playoffs.
307.
Thank you. And then so Trev and I became friends. I used to go to spring training games, and I would just sit with him during the game that he's coaching in the minor leagues. And watch the game, and he would just be telling me. I was like, "Hey, tell me about this, or why? What about that?" And all these amazing things. Yeah, he's a brilliant baseball mind.
Yeah,
he always was like, "Jim, just got to keep it simple. It's just human nature. You just got to understand human behavior."
Yeah, Coach Dunn, you talked to him. He hit 302 in the Texas Arizona League 1 year. So you know that's just.
I love Jack. Yeah,
yeah,
he's awesome.
I'll tell him you say hi.
Yeah, please. Thank you.
All right. Well, I think we're running short on time. Jim, it's been a pleasure. Glad to get to know you a bit. And best of luck, inner excellence. Train your mind for extraordinary performance in the best possible life. Any last words? Tell the soap.
Thanks so much, Brian. Yeah. I think there's so much fear and anxiety in America today, and the need is great. And what America needs is you, the listener, to be their true self, to focus on what's possible and true about themselves. And you don't know who you can become and what's possible in your life. So that's why it's so important to continue to learn and grow. I'm excited to be here and hopefully meet all the listeners. You can follow me on at innerexcellence.com, the newsletter, sign up for the VIP newsletter, or follow me on Instagram, InnerExcellence Jim Murphy, or other social media.
Yeah, I did all that this week. Because I saw that call to action. See, you got to do the call to action
awesome.
In the book
Thank you.
And on the website. But anyway, all right. Thanks, Jim.
Okay. Thanks,
Take
Brian.
Care.
Cheers.
Bye. Thanks for tuning in today and spending some time with myself and Jim Murphy. Make sure to buy Jim's book, Inner Excellence. You can grab your copy and learn more at briandeoleary.com/innerexcellence. And that's all one word, inner excellence, at briandeoleary.com. And if you want to keep exploring topics like mindset, performance, and living your best possible life, like Jim talks about, I invite you to join my daily email list at briandeoleary.com, where nearly every single day I send out emails sharing insights, practical tips to help you grow, just like we talked about today. And sometimes we delve off into other topics, but mostly it's to encourage you to keep on going. Forward momentum, as we say. So go to briandeoleary.com to sign up for the O'Leary Letter. The link is right there on the front page. Thanks again for listening. And wherever you may be, good night, everybody. Thinking about starting that new podcast of yours? Having trouble figuring out how to do it, perhaps? Never fear. We were in that same spot a few years back. At O'Leary & Company, we don't have all of it licked. But we've gone through the struggles of setting up those podcasts and those side gigs so that you don't have to. And you can go to O'LearyandCompany.com for more details. That's O'LearyandCompany.com.